The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're broadcasting this time from Edstone. It's amazing, really, to think about modern travel and just how convenient it makes it for us to carry on with various assignments, even if it's in another part of the world. I was thinking as we were leaving Edmond yesterday and then flew through the evening to the UK, and arrived early this morning. I was thinking about that passage at the end of 1 Corinthians, and this came to mind actually when we were going through the John Adams biography, and how that if he went over to Europe or France or Britain, it was oftentimes a 5 or 6 week journey. 5 or 6 weeks, I think about what we were able to participate in and enjoy over the last 2 weeks, and how much the work, God's work accomplished over those 2 weeks, with ministers coming from all over the world and assembling together in Edmond, and now all of those ministers, for the most part, are probably back home and carrying on with that momentum that was established at the conference. And it really does make it so much easier to get right around this world and to do God's work and to do it faster. But that example in 1 Corinthians 16, where the Apostle Paul, he talked about how that he wanted to come visit Corinth again when passing through Macedonia. And then he said, and it may be that I will abide, yes, and winter with you, that you may bring me on my journey whithersoever I go. And so if Paul got there at the end of, he didn't always know exactly when he'd arrive in some of these areas. And so he had to, usually he left himself an out. And he also did that in case God changed his plans, but he would oftentimes leave himself an out just because it was unpredictable, the travel back then. And so he said, if I get there and it's at the end of the fall, well, I'll probably have to just stay with you all winter. Can you imagine if that's the way that the work had to operate today, if my father was traveling around the world and he arrived at a location where, well, because of the winter setting in, he'd just have to set up shop there for the next 3 or 4 months. That's not the way that it works today. Of course, we know all about Herbert Armstrong and the work that he did as God's apostle with the G2 and the G3, flying around the world, meeting with world leaders. He, as Mr. Armstrong often explained, he lived from the horse and buggy age all the way up through to the space age. And it is incredible to think about what God has made available to his work in these very last days. A lot packed into just the past 2 weeks. And while we were away in Oklahoma, they were busy here at Edstone. We had the Edstone Winter Weekend. We just missed that. They had the American-themed hoedown dance, whatever it was, Saturday night. I've been here 4 years now, and they finally get around to something American-themed, and I just miss it. So hopefully we'll have to do something like that again. It sounded like it was good fun for everyone participating in that. As far as the work here at Edstone, they've been going to town on the new studio. They've done some renovations here in the radio studio, and then right next door to us, the lads have been working real hard to try to get the TV studio up and running. We've moved some of the lights from the garage studio down in the parking lot. We've moved those up here to the attic, and are hurriedly working to get it all set up so that the next time that we tape a TV program, it'll be from the new studio, which is a fair bit smaller and cozier. But I think it'll be a nice change of pace, considering we haven't done anything really with the studio here at Edstone in 4 years. And speaking of 4 years, today is the day, January 7th. This is the day 4 years ago that that so many of us arrived at Edstone for the first time. My family, and I think a couple of students, and then if my memory is right, I think then several students flew in the day after, January the 8th. But that was on January 7th, 2015. It's hard to believe it's been 4 full years here at Edstone. Of course, the McDonald family, they were situated here at Edstone for a couple, 3 months before we arrived. And then once we did arrive on January the 7th, 2015, then the work began to just renovate the facility here and to get the offices ready. And I'll recall that first semester, it was a challenge for the students. It was a challenge for my children doing their online classes with the academy back in Oklahoma, as there was lots of construction going on, and it continued for 5-6 months, and then finally leveled off. And even though we're still doing some things like I just mentioned up here in the attic, it really has been transformed, this beautiful, beautiful hall, Edstone Hall. Well, 4 years for us, but if you know anything about the work in Britain, the work in Ephraim, Mr. Armstrong said in his writings that the work in Britain effectively began in 1953. That's when the World Tomorrow program was broadcast from Radio Luxembourg, 1953. Today we're going to talk about some important anniversaries here in this this first segment. In the second segment, we'll be replaying or playing for the first time, I guess, because it's not on TV just yet. But we're going to be playing the audio from a Trumpet Daily video that's going to be posted this weekend, The War Against Biblical Morality. So that comes up here in just about 20 minutes or so. But in the short time that we have before that, I just want to emphasize some important anniversaries. Radio Luxembourg, that was in the first week of January 1953. Lots of things happened with God's work in the early part of January, the month of January. It says here in Mr. Armstrong's autobiography, God first opened a door, that of radio and the printing press, for the mass proclaiming of his original true gospel the first week in 1934. That's another anniversary, and we'll come to that in just a second. The fact that Mr. Armstrong went on radio for the first time, or at least in a consistent sense, he had those 15-minute shows in late 1933, but then he started going on every week, a full 30-minute broadcast. That was in 1934, and then Mr. Armstrong says exactly one time cycle later, that's 19 years, a 19-year time cycle, January 7th, 1953, God opened wide a massive door, a door of the most powerful commercial radio station on earth. The Radio Luxembourg began broadcasting Christ's gospel to Europe and Britain, it says. What startling coincidences, or are they mere coincidences? The fact that it began, the broadcast ministry began in 1934, and then 19 years later, the very same month, the very same week, the first week of January, and the message, the gospel, the true gospel message goes out over all of Europe, including a large part of Britain. With that Radio Luxembourg broadcast, Mr. Armstrong said in his autobiography, the door of the most powerful radio station on earth swung open. That was an historic open door for God's church. That was at a time, of course, when TV hadn't really yet taken off, and so radio, and there weren't that many radio stations. And so here is this powerful, powerful radio station, Radio Luxembourg, and the message, God's truth, blasting across the continent of Europe. It says here that that gospel was first preached by the Apostle Peter on the day of Pentecost. He's referring back to the first century history. The day of Pentecost, A.D. 31, and then 19 years later, A.D. 50, a door was opened to the Apostle Paul to preach that gospel in Europe for the first time. So some parallels there. with what happened in the first century, 19 years into the work, and then the door opened for Paul to preach the gospel in Europe for the first time. And then in the 20th century, we saw that same time frame, the work going out in 1934, that broadcast ministry starting, and then 19 years later, it takes off into Europe. Here's Mr. Armstrong talking about that on one of his, I think this was actually a TV program from the early 80s, clip one.
100 time cycles of 19 years went by until the year of 1953. And the largest and the biggest radio station on earth, the most powerful, Radio Luxembourg in Europe, was open to me, and I began proclaiming to the world the gospel of the kingdom. Already it had gone coast to coast in the United States prior to that, and beginning in the year of 1934. And now it has been going to all the world.
That's from his old TV program, I think from 1981 or 1982. But Radio Luxembourg, that got its start in January of 1953, and then if you fast forward 12 years to January of 1965, that's when The World Tomorrow first began to broadcast on Radio London, reaching all of England for the first time. And in writing about that, Mr. Armstrong said, "I want to report big news. It's the biggest news that ever happened in the history of this work." That tells you something about how important it was in Mr. Armstrong's mind. Reaching into Ephraim, the program was in the United States, coast to coast. It reached the entirety of the United States, and they had worked, they had tried and tried to get it into Ephraim. And then finally, January 5th, we passed that anniversary just a couple days ago, January 5, 1965, it finally goes on Radio London. And Mr. Armstrong called that the biggest news that ever happened in the history of the work. Later on in that same coworker letter, he said, "The world today took no notice whatever, yet in our radio studio here in Pasadena, a spontaneous shout reverberated from an assembled 30 or 40 people crowded into the studio, and we heard at the precise same instant via transatlantic telephone connection a sudden, even louder shout emanating from some 200 people gathered into the radio studio of our college in England and in the college dining hall there." So those campuses, they were connected together. The technology wasn't quite as great as it is today for us, but these two campuses were connected for sure. And there was excitement when that message, was going out over all of Ephraim, all of England. Well, some of you know about the history with God's College here in the UK as well, the Brickett Wood campus. Mr. Armstrong alluded to that in that quote I just read to you. The students and the staff that cheered him on as that message went out. Well, I mentioned the 1934 beginning. That's the little station, KORE, in Oregon. As I said, Mr. Armstrong had been doing a free 15-minute slot. This was, as he explains in his autobiography, it was offered to him because the KORE radio station gave it to some of the local preachers, whoever wanted to take it. And Mr. Armstrong explained that nobody else wanted to get up that early to do a program. And so he did it. And then the station manager comes to him later and says, "This is really strange. It doesn't usually happen, but we're getting quite a lot of mail in response to your program." And so they offered Mr. Armstrong a regular weekly show, a half-hour radio broadcast. And this is what put the idea of the World Tomorrow program in his mind. That started on January 7th, 1934. This is an important anniversary day. January the 7th in 1934. That's what put the idea of the World Tomorrow into my mind, Mr. Armstrong said. In the autobiography, it says, God had opened the door of mass evangelism. I knew he wanted us to walk through that door. I knew he would somehow supply that $2.50 every week. That's how much the airtime cost back then. It's significantly higher today, I'm sure. But it says here, I knew also that we had to do our part, not lie down, do nothing, and expect God to do it without any effort from us. So I sent out a letter to the small mailing list of members we had for the bulletin, and I asked for pledges from brethren to raise this $2.50 per week. But I asked this only of God's people, brethren in Christ, not of the public. It says, in due time, pledges came back for just half enough, about $1.35 per week. We decided we would trust God in faith for the other $1.15 per week. And so, well, you know the story. The work took off. Jesus Christ was opening these massive doors for a mass media message to go out via radio and then later TV. Mr. Armstrong said, on that tiny powered radio station, KORE, in that infant mimeographed Plain Truth, was going out an astonishing message, just as the public, 1,900 years before, had been astonished at Christ's gospel. So were those who began to hear this same gospel in 1934. It was so utterly different from what had been palmed off as Christianity. Here's Mr. Armstrong in a sermon from 1984 talking about that beginning, that small beginning in 1934, clip two.
I continued preaching at Jefferson for quite a while. I held those meetings in 1933. In 1934, first Sunday in 1934, we went on radio on KORE Eugene. And that started the broadcasting. February that year, the Plain Truth came out. It was just a mimeograph sheet. Today, the Plain Truth, one of the great magazines of the world, over 7 million and going toward 8 million circulation right now.
So that's the mustard seed beginning. And God really blessed Mr. Armstrong's diligent labor. He took to the airwaves and started proclaiming God's truth, the true gospel message, the message that Jesus Christ proclaimed. And even though it started small, it grew miraculously. That was 1934, and in 1942, he was off to Hollywood. That was back when you had to be in a place like Hollywood to expand a broadcast ministry. Daily radio, that's what it led to in the 1940s. And then in the 1950s, he explored the new medium of television. It wasn't really until the 60s, though, that the World Tomorrow television program took off. But he really was a pioneer, not just for God's work. He was a pioneer in the industry of radio and broadcasting. He was doing it back in the 1940s and 50s. And the work really did take off. Well, you look at, of course, it's a sad and tragic history, what happened after Mr. Armstrong died and the great falling away from the truth and the destruction of that empire. But God did raise the ruins. He's raising the ruins right now. The Key of David program started in 1993, and guess what day was our first broadcast? That would be January the 7th, 1993. We had a radio program, I think, for 6 or 8 months the year before. God's Future World, I believe it was called. My father had that program, and I forget how many stations it was on, 3 or 4 radio stations. But then in January of 1993, January the 7th, to be precise, God's Future World becomes a 30-minute television program, The Key of David. That first episode aired on, as I say, January the 7th, 1993, on 8 stations. The potential audience back then, it was just a few million. A small beginning, But you look at where we are today, and here my father's been on TV now, well, since 1993, so he's been on TV for well over 25 years. There was a period there, I think in the late 90s, during the lawsuit, when we were off television just for a short time. But for the most part, 25, 26, 27 years, God's truth going right around the world. The Key of David, January 7th, 1993, small beginnings. There's some other interesting things to point out regarding this first week in January. It was back in 1972 on January 6th when the loan came through for Mr. Armstrong and the Worldwide Church of God to construct Ambassador Auditorium. And so, again, they were celebrating. And Mr. Armstrong, in this article from 1974, it's called The Magnificent New Ambassador College Auditorium, he talked about just how unusual it was for a church to be able to get a loan for a project such as that, this magnificent auditorium. They got the loan on January the 6th. They broke ground, I think, a couple weeks later. And then, of course, that auditorium, that magnificent house for God, that was finished, I believe, in April of 1974. It says here in that article that Mr. Armstrong wrote, ground was broken shortly after the middle of January 1972. The construction was finished, at least so far as necessary, for the opening concerts on April 7th, 1974, by the Vienna Symphony Orchestra, which was conducted by the eminent Carlo Maria Giulini. So that's a little bit of history about the House of God back in Mr. Armstrong's day. He says later on in this article that all who were involved in this project, the architects, the engineers, the craftsmen, they all seemed to realize they were working on a once-in-a-century character of building to be dedicated, he said, to the honor and glory of the living God. Well, you look at the House of God today, not the one in Pasadena, but the new house, Armstrong Auditorium. We broke ground on that project on January 6th, 2008. We passed that anniversary just yesterday. The groundbreaking ceremony. That beautiful day, even though it was in the middle of the winter, it was a nice sunny day. Back in 2008, my father announced later, or he wrote later about the ceremony, saying, I have some inspiring news to share with you. We've started building a house for God. He says it will be a fabulous auditorium, probably the best of its kind in Oklahoma and much of the U.S. And then he talks about the loan that we took out, $10.25 million, and how unusual, again, very similar to the story from 1972, just how unusual it is to get a loan for a project such as this. We got the loan, we had the groundbreaking, and just like with 1972, it took about 2 years or 2 years plus. And of course, that beautiful and magnificent House of God in which we had the ministerial conference just a week ago, that's completely paid for. And we're working our way toward paying down the little debt that's left on the aircraft as well. God truly is blessing his work. It's a small number of faithful brethren, co-workers, and donors. But look at the work that's being done while flying home over the last 24 hours. I was able to get through a fair bit of Malachi's message, and I just love the way that that book opens with this call to remembrance, a reference to Malachi 3 and verse 16, and just how important it is for us to remember. And my father makes the point there that God remembers us because we remember. He says, in fact, that we're warned to remember. We can't forget these things. The Laodiceans fail to escape because they forget. They forget about this work. They've forgotten God's truth. They've ruined that work, and yet God says in Malachi 3 that there's a book of remembrance for those who remember God's truth. One quote from the opening pages of Malachi's message, it says, "The entire book of Malachi revolves around two groups, those who forget, the majority, and those who remember, the minority." He says, are you in that book of remembrance? Anyone who is not is destined to go into the great tribulation, and 50% of those who rebel will go into the lake of fire. We must take this warning seriously. We're warned to remember. Well, some of these anniversaries, as I say, it gives us a good opportunity to think back and to appreciate what God has done. When we come back, we'll be playing the audio from the new program that plays this weekend, The War Against Biblical Morality. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If the church came into existence as an instrumentality for getting people saved, then by what means did God try to save people prior to Christ's founding of the church? Jesus did not appear until 4,000 years after Adam and the original sin. If God is and has been trying to convert the world, what means did he use during that 4,000 years between Adam and Christ? Few people in the traditional Christian world have ever stopped to even consider these questions. To nearly everyone on earth, the very existence of the church is a great mystery. The biblical facts of the church's origin and its purpose for being are clearly revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, Mystery of the Ages. Request your complimentary copy today. It's offered free of charge at no cost or obligation to you. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm. or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the program. In 2018, we passed a lot of important anniversaries. In November, the world remembered the armistice of 1918, the war that was supposed to end all wars. On today's program, we're going to talk about another war, a war that has been raging for more than a century, the war against biblical morality.
You're living in a world that is erupting, a world that is changing so drastically.
God tells us what's going to happen in this world. He tells us what's prophesied, and there is a key to unlock these prophecies.
I tell you, it is about time we began to blow the dust off of the Bible, because it reveals the meaning of everything in your life.
In my father's Key of David television program in the United States, one that he gave back in early 2018 about Shakespeare and the British Empire, he said that Shakespeare wrote at a time when the British people were ardently devoted to the reading of the Bible. The reading of the Bible. Now, Shakespeare lived in the late 1500s, early 1600s. The King James Bible Project, that happened in the early 1600s as well. And all of this was long before the British Empire exploded onto the scene. But as my father explained in that program from early 2018, this was God getting the empire ready, or getting the British people ready for their empire. It was all prophesied. Notice that in Genesis chapter 35, Genesis 35, verse 10, it says, "And God said unto him, Your name is Jacob, your name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be your name. And he called his name Israel. And God said to him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of you, and kings shall come out of your loins." So I don't have time to get into that particular prophecy in great detail, but you can certainly request the United States and Britain in prophecy if you'd like to study that further. But those blessings, those birthright blessings, came upon our peoples, the United States and Great Britain, beginning around the early 1800s. And you see this emerging superpower in the United States, and you see this empire develop on this little island. Notice what Herbert Armstrong said. This is in The Missing Dimension in Sex. He said, "In my lifetime, we have..." Now, he lived in the late 1800s and all the way through most of the 1900s. He said, "In my lifetime, we have whipped past the machine age, the automobile age, the jet age, the nuclear age, and the space age. What stimulated this accelerating materialistic development?" He says, "It occurred simultaneously with the sudden spurt to national wealth and power of two nations, Britain and the United States, beginning in 1800. It happened right around that time, beginning in 1800. Now, here in Britain, Queen Victoria, she dominated that century, ascending to the throne in Britain when she was just a teenager, and her reign continued on for 63 years, carrying all the way through to the first year or two of the 20th century, 1901. And if you think about life in Britain, just to use Britain as our primary example here, if you think about life in Britain during the 1800s, in the home, when the family, the home, it was like a sanctuary for the British people. And their discipline, what they taught to their children in school and at home, and how that they were taught to submit to orders, to follow instructions, and they weren't allowed to stray very far away from their parents. This is just a different time I'm describing. Work ethic, that was something that was really valued. History was something that the British people revered. They revered their own history. And as my father brought out in that Shakespeare program, they read their Bibles, and a lot of them took it literally. They applied it in a literal sense. This is life in Britain in the 1800s. It's not to say that it was perfect or that they were without sin, but what a difference when you just compare it to our time today. And is it just a coincidence that during this Victorian era, that's when the British Empire reached its high water mark? And then what happened after she died? What happened as we entered into the 20th century? As I said at the top of the program, we've been looking back on a lot of anniversaries, or we've been passing a lot of anniversaries that have caused us to look back, like to the end of World War I, the end of the Great War. Well, let's look back to that period and also consider some other dramatic changes that have been happening. Edward VII, he's the one that carried on after Victoria, and he was a very different monarch, to say the least. He got caught up into a lot of sins, womanizing, indolence, things like that. William Manchester, in his biography on Churchill, he said, "Before the Edwardian era, authors could assume for their readers to know Latin and the Bible." They just assumed. Before the Edwardian era, back in the Victorian era, it was assumed. So my father talked about Shakespeare and the Bible going back to the 1500s and the 1600s. And really, that carried on through to the 1800s. Let me take you back to The Missing Dimension in Sex. This is the book, by the way, that we're going to be offering on today's program, free of charge, no cost, no follow-up, no obligation. But we'd like for you to have a free copy. If you haven't gotten this book already, make sure that you call our operators and request your free copy of Mr. Armstrong's work. It says, it occurred simultaneously, this is just to carry on with that last quote that I gave you, with the sudden spurt of national wealth and power of two nations, Britain and the United States, beginning in 1800. That's what we read before. But then it says further, with this suddenly acquired material wealth, our people became materialistically minded. So we received all of these blessings, all of this prosperity, and what did we do with it? Well, I want to take you over to Deuteronomy, the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 8, and see here what God warned the Israelites. This is an important warning from Moses to the people of Israel. He said to them, look, when you come into the promised land, you better be careful. You better be careful when you receive all of these blessings of abundance, because it really could cause you to relax morally. It could cause you to not look to God like you once did. This is a quote that I gave to you recently on another program. Again, this is Manchester talking about that time, the 1800s. The solid core of agreed religious belief was gone. This is actually talking about coming into the Edwardian era, the early 1900s. He says the Bible had lost its grip on Englishmen. People were groping for a substitute. The new vogues were popular psychology, pragmatism, and Nietzscheanism. Fruits of inventive genius promised more excitement to come, but the cumulative effect of all this change, which should have broadened the human vision, gave men a sense of confinement and helplessness. All of these advancements, it should have broadened their thinking. But it didn't. It didn't. It just gave men a sense of confinement and helplessness. How sad, really. This is Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 7. For the Lord your God brings you into a good land, a land of brooks, of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills. And can't we say that about our land as well? Whether it's Great Britain or the United States, God brought us into a good land, to say the least. All of the blessings, all of the prosperity. That's not to say we haven't had to fight for our freedoms and for this prosperity. But look at what God just gifted to us. He gave it all to us. And what have we done? Verse 11, it says, beware, here's the warning, beware that you forget not the eternal your God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command you this day, lest when you have eaten and are full and have built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when your herds and flocks multiply, it says, and your silver and your gold is multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart be lifted up, and you forget the eternal your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. This is what often happens when we fight through a time of trial and test, and then we come through it and we relax. We relax. We let down. We let our guard down. We forget God. We stop crying out to God. Now, look back over the past century. You can go back to, again, just to use World War I as an example. That war really did transform the course of the geopolitical order, for sure. And it wreaked havoc upon our nations, even though we came out victorious. In a lot of ways, it was a loss, certainly for Great Britain. But just the devastating impact that it had on the morale, on family, on wealth. It says here in The Missing Dimension in Sex, once again, in the wake of World War I, the agitation resulting from Freud's revolutionary conclusions finally brought about the toppling of the legal barriers. So what Mr. Armstrong's writing about here in The Missing Dimension in Sex is that in addition to all of these massive changes brought on by not just one world war, but two, it also triggered a revolution in moral attitudes and social values, that kind of thing. And he says here in The Missing Dimension that the legal barriers came down after World War I. And it used to be that you really didn't have literature out there, magazines, books, or whatever, on the subject of sex. That was just sort of kept off in a corner somewhere. But here the legal barriers come down, it says, and the moral barriers began breaking down simultaneously. With the removal of legal restraints against sex instruction, medical doctors and psychoanalysts began grinding out volume after volume, imparting heretofore banned instruction about sex. You couldn't even get into it before that World War I period. But what has that information taught us? Well, as Mr. Armstrong explains, and you can see it in the title there, there's a missing dimension. Sure, scientists and psychologists and them, they may have a lot of physical details, right, I suppose, but they don't understand the God-ordained purpose for marriage, for family, for sex. They don't know about the missing dimension. This goes on to say, the world began throwing off the restraints. The revolt was on against prudery, repression, and ignorance. The new sensual knowledge, with its most needed dimension missing, quickly began to be gulped in by curiosity-hungry minds. The young people of today have little awareness of the sex and family conditions in pre-war years. In fact, until 1914, so that takes you back to the World War I era, until 1914, there had been little basic change for some 4,000 years. Now, one of the things Mr. Armstrong talks about in this book is how that before that period, you had the old morality, which certainly isn't of God either, not teaching your children, just not saying anything about these subjects of why sex, why marriage, and so on. But then when you swing from that extreme over to the new morality, well, that's like leaping from the frying pan into the fire. One final bit here. He says, the prior to 1914 years were as different from today's world as day is from night. It is not only a moral revolution, a revolution in government, in economics, in science, in technology, in education, in labor standards, and in social values, even in religion. It's shaken, he says, the whole world. The whole world is in revolt. That's what he's talking about here. Make sure that you get your copy of The Missing Dimension in Sex. Together with this book, we're going to offer No Freedom Without Law. It's been a while since we've offered this booklet. And then also Character in Crisis. These two booklets are wonderful companions. Character in Crisis and No Freedom Without Law. And here's the new issue of our Trumpet magazine. As I've been saying on recent programs, if you subscribe to the Trumpet, and again, there's no subscription price, but you can subscribe today and get this in your mailbox every month. And as many of you now know, our Trumpet subscribers, they're the ones that we invite to our public Bible lectures. We had one in London recently. We have one coming up in Belfast in January. And then another one in Glasgow. We hope to plan that one in mid-March sometime. So we are working to get out and about so that we can meet some of you, our viewers, and some of you, our Trumpet readers. So stay tuned for the information that you need and request the free material today. We'll be right back.
Since World War I, there has been an avalanche of books, pamphlets, and magazines, all instructing people on the subject of sex. Sex education is taught in schools, discussed everywhere, and almost as promiscuously indulged in. But did you know that in all of this, the most vitally important dimension of knowledge is missing? The missing dimension in sex contains the vital missing dimension of God's divinely ordained purposes for marriage and sex. Everyone needs this knowledge, including parents, singles, teens, and children. It is much more than a guidebook about sex. It is a guidebook for living. If you would like to learn the God-ordained purposes of sex, please request our free book, The Missing Dimension in Sex.
I want to take you now to a quote from The Plain Truth. This goes back to 1984, and this is basically just a snapshot of most of the 20th century. The author here says, in the 1930s, economic depression descended upon the world. The Great Depression was caused by human greed for profits at the expense of others, for gain beyond that which was honestly produced and earned. And then it says, World War II intervened and temporarily lifted some nations from economic depression, but the curse of war ripped men from their families. Here he's just talking about the impact, the massive social impact of something like World War. It says, and wives, for the first time, in great numbers, flocked to work outside the home to aid the war effort. A post-World War II pattern was set for unprecedented numbers of mothers to leave their homes and children for jobs and careers, leaving more and more children lacking in proper maternal instruction and discipline. Now, that's just the reality. They left for the workforce during those war years, and then when the wars ended, they continued working outside the home. And what happens on a widespread scale? What happens to our society, to our families, to our children, when you see these kinds of massive social changes? Well, together with that, there were other movements in the 20th century, the rise of feminism, the modernist religious movement. Mr. Armstrong in The Missing Dimension talks about how that when those moral barriers were toppled, the clergy, the ministers, religion, they didn't do anything about it. They didn't stand up for the truth of God. They didn't fight for biblical morality. They didn't fight to keep the world out of the churches. They allowed the world to come in, worldliness. And that didn't help. And you have, together with that, the spread of German rationalism in education. And look at where we are today. Just look at one proverb to take one example. In the 1950s or 60s, I forget the exact year, but the writings of Benjamin Spock, they were received in academia. And of course, he was all about, and this followed right in the line of Sigmund Freud, free expression, no discipline, no discipline. Look at what this proverb says, Proverbs 29 and verse 15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings his mother to shame. Discipline. Discipline, it says. It brings wisdom. And yet, if you just leave your child to roam, to just do his own thing or do her own thing, it brings shame on the family. Well, many of you are familiar with the so-called sexual revolution of the 1960s and just the breakdown of the family. Moral relativism, value relativism, today political correctness run amok, and all of the statistics and the trends regarding family, children born out of wedlock, the number of children aborted every year, millions, the spread of divorce, what a curse that has been to our families, and then added to that, because of all of the sexual promiscuity, the spread of disease, AIDS, and STDs. And here we are today with just about every kind of deviant sexual behavior. It's not only accepted, it's applauded. It's applauded. Let me take you to another passage. This is 1 Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 11. You think this kind of instruction would be received well today, even in churches? Would they accept this? 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 14, it says, does not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame to him? Paul says, look, you should see this even in nature, that if he has long hair, it's a shame. That's a shame. That's New Testament. It's right out of 1 Corinthians. Verse 15 says, but if a woman have long hair, it's a glory to her, for her hair is given for her a covering. It's a glory for a woman to look that way, and it's a shame. It's a shame for a man to look that way. I'm just giving you what the Bible says, that's all. You could just read it in your own King James version of the Bible, or any version for that matter. Verse 16, let me just read that in Moffat. It says, if anyone presumes to raise objections on this point, well, I acknowledge to no other mode of worship, and neither do the churches of God. You can disagree if you want to, Paul says, but look, there's no other mode of worship. This is the truth. This is God's perspective. Let me give you a quote from one of our articles at The Trumpet. As I said, make sure you subscribe to The Trumpet. But this is in The Trumpet magazine from back in 2016. American morality is transforming. We'll use America now as the example. Where will it be 5 years from now? It progressed from the traditional Judeo-Christian family to the non-religious family, to the dysfunctional family, to the divorced and remarried family, to the fornicator, to the adulterer, to the homosexual, bisexual, pansexual, transsexual, transgender. Is that where it ends? Or is there more transformation to come? Well, what do you suppose the answer is to that question? Are they satisfied, those pushing those agendas? Or are they still going to demand more change in the direction of deviance? It always goes in that direction. Let's just conclude over in 2 Timothy chapter 3. And you see, if this isn't proof, what we've seen over the past century, one full century of the new morality. That's what they called it in the 1960s. It's new. It's better because, well, if it's new, it has to be better. Is it better? Well, look around you. Look at what God says. This is verse 1 of 2 Timothy 3. This know also that in the last days perilous or dangerous times shall come. For men, verse 2, shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. That's God's description. That's how God characterizes our society. For men shall be lovers of their own selves. They're just concerned about themselves. Radical individualism. Me first. That's the thinking. Verse 3. Without natural affection. Truce breakers. False accusers. Incontinent or lacking in discipline. Self-control. Fierce despisers. Despisers of those that are good. They despise those who would come along and say, well, hey, what about the biblical morality? What about what God says? What about what nature even shows us or teaches? They don't want to hear it. Despise those that are good. Verse 4 says, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. There was a time when we used to love the Bible, when commentators could write something and just assume that the readers were familiar with the Bible. Well, those days are long gone. Those days are long gone. One more quote here from The Missing Dimension in Sex. He says, bear in mind, the present world in revolt is in rebellion against much more than pre-20th century sex repression, and the modern downward spiral of humanity involves a much wider area than sex alone. In other words, as I said earlier, we're living in a world in revolt. It's in rebellion against God's truth. It's hostile to the truth of God. Romans 8:7. It wants nothing whatever to do with biblical morality. We have rejected that top to bottom. Isaiah 1 says there's a sickness. It goes from the head to the tips of our toes. And this is why. Because we've gotten away from this biblical morality. Verse 5 here in 2 Timothy 3, it says, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. Don't even associate with it. Just turn away from this kind of living. It's hard to do when it's all around you. But this is what God expects. One last quote. He says, since this is just to emphasize how dangerous this is, this movement, where we are now after a century of this, since it's a basic truism that a solid family structure is the foundational bulwark of any stable and permanent society, this fact means only one thing. Civilization as we know it is on the way down and out unless that great unseen strong hand from someplace soon intervenes and saves today's sick society. We need God's intervention, and that intervention is coming. Equip yourself with this wonderful literature, The Missing Dimension in Sex, and then these two booklets, Character in Crisis, No Freedom Without Law, and if you haven't already, subscribe to The Trumpet. Make sure that you do that today as well. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.
Request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. In addition to this free book, also request Herbert W. Armstrong's superb textbook on dating, marriage, and family, first written in 1964, The Missing Dimension in Sex. There is no cost or follow-up. Both Character in Crisis and The Missing Dimension in Sex are free upon request.